Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Really, 007.
We will now move on to the next section, which is, well, it seems to be the go-to phrase at the moment. John's named this Make It Last All Night, discussing the 80s Bond films. And if we can do anything, we can make chatting last all night. So same gag repurposed by a few of us now. We do like to go on. I'm going on in this intro. Right, so this is basically our love for John Glenn, who we've interviewed, of course. Timothy Dalton, you might not have picked that up by now. And the different episodes and interviews we've been involved with this year. So we've had Carrie, we had going over Carrie's amazing book. And if you haven't read that, buy it. It's brilliant. He disagreed with something that ate him, which is an analytical look at the two Timothy Dalton films. And that was really, like I said before, getting the oh, there it is. Free advertising for those on video. You probably won't know. Yeah. But just sort of looking at the films more like they were at the time and things that you wouldn't realise. David Stevens has got it as well.
Thank you, David.
Look at all this, Carrie. The royalties must be sweeping in at the moment. But yeah, great to see you, Carrie. And thank you for joining us this evening.
Well, you know, it's 50-50 because I'm actually, I haven't booked my tickets for No Time to Die yet because I'm right at the tail end of COVID, which I've just had the last week. So I tested positive on Sunday, but I got ill on Friday. And so I have hauled myself from the gurney just for you guys. I am painkillered up to the eyeballs. No, I'm fine, but I've had a fun week of sleeping and doing nothing, which is good preparation. Don't worry, I'm cool, Deb. Thank you.
Well, I mean,
and then you end up winning a quiz that you weren't even involved in.
Well, but I didn't get a quiz on the podcast that I did, and I was very disappointed because bloody studied for hours. I had gone through all sorts of random crap for that, and you didn't give me one, so that was disappointing. But no, it was great to talk to you and to your podcasts are just so much fun. And the thing that I'm getting out of what lots of people are saying here, and I think is true of the Bond community, and I think it was maybe George or somebody else said it, is that you can have a conversation in the Bond community that's about love for the franchise, not hatred for the people who don't like something. So it is a weird franchise if you stand back and look at the tones of it and the context and how it's changed. But I love that because there's almost like I can watch a Bond film with any mood I ever have. That's brilliant.
It is, isn't it? It is. And this is what we want, a place of love. I will just do one cheap gag. You've managed to, you know, you've got COVID, you're not well, you've managed to turn up. But did you know that Daniel Craig did 9 months of filming with a broken leg? It's not like anywhere near that good, mate. Come on.
No, it's not. I only found that out. I watched that documentary the other day. I've not listened to your podcast on it. I'm very sorry.
No,
but I do have a side effect. Gert said, Gert asked about side effects. I can't taste a damn thing.
Oh.
So I got some beer in the fridge specially for this. I got some Heineken. I thought I'd do a bit of cross promotion for the brand. And they're pointless. I'm just drinking water. I just nothing. This is should be a Bond villain thing, though. He has absolutely no sense of taste, like
Renard.
Robert Carlyle, who has no sense of touch, no sense of taste or something. So he just goes around licking James Bond. Or I don't know what he would do. I don't know what you would do with that, but there's options.
Well, lovely. Well, there's not enough reference. That's what we want. We'll be discussing that later. Yeah, thank you, Carrie. And we've also got here ITV Steve Clamp. Good evening, Steve.
Hello, guys. This has been great fun. I've got in from work it was about 8 o'clock, and I just joined, and I've just been laughing ever since at everything. So it's really nice to be here, and great to see you all. And there's a lot of you guys. Obviously, I was a guest on one of the podcasts, so I've virtually met obviously a couple of you, and I've chatted to a few. But there's a lot of faces here I'm seeing, having heard voices. Usually in my gym, where I tend to listen to the podcast. I don't know what my neighbours think. In the summer, I've had the door wide open in the gym. Most people in the gym might have, you know, pop tunes on or rock or something. And there I am, you guys, whittering on for the eighth hour about the world is not enough.
Yeah. So. Rob's laugh.
Rob's laugh. Yeah. All my neighbours think I'm great fun because they think I'm laughing. And they don't realise I never laugh.
We had Steve on. I think we were talking about the Living Daylights soundtrack, which is just incredible, isn't it? And we didn't know that there were people out there who loved this and sort of grew up listening to this music and watching these Bond films. Yeah, it was so good to sort of share that love with you, Steve.
Yeah, and it is great. And do you know what? I'll just chip in to podcasts in general, which I got into podcasts about 2 years ago when I was contacted out of the blue to be a guest on another podcast talking about Never Say Never Again, strangely.
Oh.
And then that triggered me to start looking at podcasts. And then I found you guys, which was one of the, I guess it was probably a year ago I came across you. And then we obviously ended up in touch, and I've loved it. But what I think is brilliant about podcasts, and this is coming from someone who obviously works in television, is that what you can do, your John Glenn one is probably my favorite so far because I just adore everything John Glenn did. You can really give him the time that I want you to give him. And obviously, if you're a broadcaster like myself, let's say for some reason we interviewed John Glenn, which would be a dream and hasn't sadly happened so far. But if we did, for whatever reason, for our program, he would get 3 or 4 minutes on the show because we know that most of the public won't care that much. But you guys, it's the dream ticket, really, because you're appealing to people like me and everyone else who's on here tonight, and you can give them the time he deserves. I remember when GoldenEye came out, and I used to buy Empire magazine, and they did loads and loads on GoldenEye, but it still wasn't enough because I wanted everything, you know what I mean? And it's like that's where podcasts really shine because you can talk, I say to the niche, there's obviously millions of Bond fans, but you can really target them. And then for people like me, it's an absolute joy. And to talk to you guys, I mean, who would think that I would listen to a podcast about The World Is Not Enough that is actually longer than the pre-title sequence of The World Is Not Enough? But I did, and I loved it.
Hey, me. Oh, brilliant, Steve. Absolutely brilliant. Right. Also in this section, you know, technically started it, but Glenn Standish. And Glenn, we had you on quite a while ago talking about, and well, one of our favourite Bond films on the Manchester Secret Service, and that was a real treat. And if anyone didn't know, there is a fourth pickup brother called James, and Glenn was at school with James. So is James even weirder than us? I think.
Yeah, that's how I basically got involved in this. Is that James basically just recommended me this podcast, and that's basically how I got involved. And you had me on one of the shows, and that was fantastic. We were talking about On a Majesty Secret Service soundtrack and also the soundtrack to Skyfall as well, a bit of a contrast those two. And I was actually in England at the time, literally just down the road from the school where I first met James. So, but tonight I'm live from Poland.
Oh, yeah, international edition again. It's brilliant. And thanks for the people who are, I don't know, goodness knows what time it is in some of these countries, but I really appreciate you joining us. Yeah, Glenn, it was really interesting to have you on that, and we will have you on board again. But You're in Poland at the moment, and what's it like in Poland? What's the reception of James Bond in Poland?
Well, the tickets are on sale. I haven't actually bought my ticket yet for the new film, but there seems to be a bit of excitement. I'm actually the boss at a language school, and we've got about 20 teachers, most of them from the UK at the moment, and they all want to go to see the film. They're all quite excited. They know I'm doing this podcast tonight, and they've asked me questions. They've all said hello, by the way.
Well, yeah.
So, I mean, it's just like any country, I think. You know, James Bond is popular in Poland.
That's so good to hear, because you just don't know, do you?
You don't know, but we did mention in the podcast that it's never been filmed in Poland, and I'd love to have the James Bond series come and actually shoot on location here in Poland. Would be great.
Some beautiful places in Poland, so yeah, I don't know why they haven't done that already, but yeah, here's hoping for.
I've been to the Czech Republic. Casino Royale was filmed in the Czech Republic, but that's basically the closest it's been to Poland.
Yeah,
posing as Montenegro.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. We've also got in this section, we've got the man with the red trousers himself. We've got Chris Eales, who's also known as 007 Bookshelf on Instagram. So good evening, Chris.
And we can see that bookshelf.
Yes. Yeah. And it's red.
Yeah.
Are the trousers red, Chris?
Bookshelf goes all. The trousers are not red. They are a lovely shade of beige this evening.
How did you hear about us, Chris?
It was just stumbling through the podcast app on my iPhone, and it threw up you might like this sort of. You've looked into all of these other film podcasts, so give this one a try. And was in deep from the start. The Octopussy episodes and Rob's fantastic laugh. Just
sorry, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, man.
No apology is necessary. It was terrific.
Go on with the quiz. Brilliant, Chris. Absolutely brilliant. And another get. We'll have you on certainly in the next few months, Chris. It's been really good getting to know you as well. So your bookshelf accounts. How come it's that and it isn't Chris Eales? What's the difference?
Oh no, it was supposed to be 007 Bookshelf across Twitter and Instagram, but unfortunately, before I even managed to post a single tweet, the powers that be decided to pull my account for obscene and abusive use. I mean, you know, just because I'm bad mouthing never say never again, I just don't know why I'm being targeted there. No, it was supposed to be all about the books of Bond, because as you see with the bookshelf, I've been collecting the different editions since my youth, and just going around car boots and charity shops and just getting all the different artwork and then all of the oddities that there are out there. And yeah, slowly the collection has built up and built up. And I just thought, well, I can't do a podcast. Let's do something else. So trying to slowly share the artwork and the books with everyone.
Yeah, the amount of books and artwork and poster collections that we've got since we started this podcast, it's crazy. It's so exciting getting new Bond books and reading different takes, seeing new photos and like Thunderballs 007 online as well. Just incredible images that just get you so in the mood for Bond. Growing up then, for you, Chris, who was your favourite Bond?
Favourite Bond when I started out was Connery, purely because I can remember in my far youth coming home, being out one evening at Christmas and just catching the end of Goldfinger, and the jet was flying down. He was sucked out of the airplane, and then suddenly him wrapped up in the parachute with Pussy Galore. I was just, what is this? This is amazing. And then chatting to my father about it and just being like, what was this that I just missed? Yeah, then explaining there are all these other films and they're just getting sucked in. And recording them off the TV on bank holiday Mondays. I can still remember being excited that Thunderball was coming on one Easter bank holiday weekend, and then trying to time it so that I could not record the commercial breaks. I'm sure a lot of people have had that experience. I can remember doing The Living Daylights when it had its ITV premiere, stop for the record, then trying to start again. So you had a continuous film rather than having all the ad breaks in it.
Oh, they came at annoying times, didn't they? Sometimes, like the Octopussy one, got rid of the, and that's for 009. Couldn't be bothered with that lovely bit. So it's no wonder people thought Roger was just a joke, isn't it? Yeah. But yeah, in terms of your bookshelf, what are your favourite Fleming books of the Bond?
Favourite Fleming book? Well, I always read on Her Majesty's Secret Service at least once a year. It is such a solid book. Usually I keep it for around Christmas time, just for that dark, festive feel. I think his best book was From Russia With Love. It's just such a... It stands out from all the others. It's got that first half of the conspiracy and then the action, and you know what's going to unfurl, and it's just that... It's almost like a really good Columbo episode. You know the murder has happened, and how is it going to play out? And it's only up until that point, when he's in the train carriage with Grant, that he's in control. Up until that point, he's just a puppet.
Chris, can I ask you? Can I chip in and just ask you a question while you're on the theme of the books? Because I've read all the Fleming books a couple of times. Well, what's your take on You Only Live Twice? Because I find it just as mad as eggs.
It is a bit crazy. It's in keeping with the progression of the Bond character, and certainly in the progression of the Bond films having an influence on Fleming as well. You know, we've just come off the back of Tracy's death. Bond is a mess. He's fallen apart, and M is giving him his last chance. And yeah, it is crazy, but how else are you going to deal with a Bond that's gone to pieces than to send him after someone as crazy as Blofeld? Blofeld has gone crazy as well, let's remember.
Blofeld's, you know, we're all walking around in night as dressed as a knight, isn't he? And finds him as a massive coincidence. I don't want to go on much of a detail because I know not everyone's read the books, but I just always think when I read them all, that one stands out to me. It's like, I don't know what Fleming was on, but maybe I need to give it another go, because I've not reread that one because I just found it so utterly bizarre. I've read all the others several times, but I have to give it another go.
It is very bizarre, and it is very dark as well. When we're reading the sequences going through the Garden of Death, some of the descriptions are quite harrowing. You know, it really is. This is not for kids, and, you know, this is for adults. I see David nodding. I know he's a big supporter of You Only Live Twice as a novel. It's odd. I would not recommend it as a first Bond book at all. You've got to, that's one of the ones that you've got to read in sequence. You know, it is part of I've got the book on the bookshelf there, the Spectre trilogy, which to my mind, it's not really the Spectre trilogy, it's the Blofeld trilogy. You know, it's him, it's Bond and Blofeld fighting it out. Spectre only appear in Thunderball. It's arguable that they're not really in on Her Majesty's Secret Service, the novel, at all. And then, of course, they're not at all in You Only Live Twice. It's Blofeld and Imra in their castle.
I'll just chip in one more and then I'll stop and take
off
things
the books
over.
A bit. just
because I will just mention, this doesn't really need a discussion, but I know Fleming sort of disowned himself from the Spy Love Me novel, which is strange. And I can perhaps see why at the time, but actually, I think it's a great one, a really great Bond book. I love The Spy Love Me. It's totally different to all the others, but I think it's a great one. So if anyone is thinking of reading some Fleming books and they haven't read them, I would put that up there as just a very different book, but really interesting. And strangely, obviously one of the most lighthearted Bond films and yet one of the darkest novels.
Anyway. Agree in full there, Steve. Agree in full.
You've got the first edition, haven't you, Rob? Well, maybe not the first edition, but you've got some...
I've got a very early edition of that one, yeah. And what shocked me was that Bond wasn't even a character until, you know, like, we're nearly at the end. So, you know, when I was like 10 reading it, it was like, what? Where's the hero?
I can imagine people at the time, they probably liked the formula. As you know, we all quite like a bit of a formula, and it very much goes away from that formula. So perhaps at the time it was almost like Daniel Craig going away from a formula that I enjoy in the films. And so perhaps it was a similar thing with the novels at the time. But in retrospect, I think it's a really good book. Sorry, I promised to stop interrupting.
No, it's good. No, we will.
I agree. Totally agree.
We will do episodes. We intend to do a series on the books, but goodness me, we just...
Got to read them.
Yeah. You might have noticed. No. Yeah. You noticed. That's another line. Right. And our final collaborator for this section, which we've pretty much finished already, I'm joking. Matt Kanzik, all the way from lovely LA, I believe.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not too lovely today. It's a bit cloudy. So. Oh,
shame.
My heart bleeds.
All the, of all the days.
Yeah.
No, good to have you back, Matt. And we had you on an episode talking about basically three of the greatest songs ever written, didn't we? I think Live and Let Die, License to Kill, and Goldeneye. And
two of the greatest songs ever written.
Well, yeah. He doesn't like the bridge to Live and Let Die. But yeah, it's great to have you back, Matt. And yeah, what have you been thinking about No Time to Die? What's it like in America? What's the build up to that?
I mean, honestly, I haven't seen a lot of mention of it, but, you know, it varies so much state to state over here in terms of trends and what people can and can't do and all that kind of thing. But yeah, it's definitely starting to get more of a push in the last week or so. It's coming up on promoted ads and all that kind of thing here. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see what the few cinemas near me are gonna do by way of, you know, nighttime screenings and all that kind of thing when it actually does come out.
And you are going to see it, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's good. Just checking. Right. So let's dig into the 80s themselves. So we've got five films in the 80s, and John Glenn directed them all. We've got Make It Last All Night, of course, made famous by Fiori Zoli. Octopussy, A View to a Kill, which we haven't really covered as much as the other ones yet.
No.
Even though it is, and we're obsessed with that film as well, don't worry. And then, of course, the two Timothy Dalton films, Living Daylights and License to Kill. Matt, first of all, just while you're here, which of those is your favourite? And I know the answer.
Well, you do know the answer. Yeah, obviously License to Kill. But Living Daylights is a close second for me.
Oh, right, OK.
Yeah, big fan of that.
Harry's had a massive resurgence of For Your Eyes Only. So I just want to have a bit of focus on that.
So that was the one which, thinking back to my youth when, as Chris was saying, the, you know, cassettes and, you know, all taped off ITV, it was probably For Your Eyes Only and You Only Live Twice, which were the two which got, they required re-records, if I can put it that way, from the, you know, overwatching. But yeah, I loved For Your Eyes Only. I thought it was great. The really dramatic zoom in on her after the parents' death and the music era. I think that was probably one of the moments I was hooked on that one.
You obviously love Dalton, but you are a Roger fan as well, I'm hoping.
Yeah, I mean, he was the one which my parents liked. So I think that obviously has an effect on people when they're growing up as well. But I mean, View to a Kill is very close behind the Dalton films for me. You know, I'm a big Christopher Walken fan anyway, but yeah, I thought that was a fantastic film. Great music, obviously, but just as a whole, it's a really well-rounded film.
Glenn, you must have been growing up with these films as a kid on the cinema. What, just, you know, now I think they're like that run of John Glenn is my favourite. And what was it like when those were coming out? It must, every 2 years as well?
I completely agree. I mean, purely for nostalgic reasons, one of my favourites has to be Octopussy, because it was the very first James Bond film I ever saw in the cinema. I was age 6, that gives my age away. And I remember my mum took me to the cinema, and it just blew my mind. I was just like, wow, what is this film? And I loved every second of it. And I remember a couple of weeks later seeing a big poster with another different looking James Bond. Because obviously the poster advertising Never Say Never Again with Sean Connery. I was like, Mom, what's going on? Why is there two James Bonds? I was completely confused. And obviously I didn't like that one as much as Octopussy. Octopussy just wowed me. And then when I was 10, I went and saw The Living Daylights. I loved the poster of The Living Daylights, you know, with the gun barrel. It's just such a beautiful poster. And from that moment, I think I went, at the age of 10, I went to the cinema about 5 times to see The Living Daylights. So, yeah. I loved it, and I just didn't get bored, you know. It's quite, for a 10-year-old, it's quite a complicated story.
For a 36-year-old, it's a blooming complicated story, yeah.
Definitely.
Sorry, carry on, Glenn. I rudely interrupted you.
No, that's all right. No, I'm pretty much done. Yeah, yeah. For nostalgia reasons, The Living Daylights and Octopussy, I saw them both at the cinema and absolutely loved them.
Was it weird growing up knowing that Roger Moore was retiring and you're going to get a new Bond?
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, it was weird seeing this new Timothy Dalton guy. It's like, you know, completely different person. But I got over that, and I enjoyed the film as it was, The Living Daylights. And only a few weeks ago, you know this because I posted some pictures on your Facebook page, but I was actually in Vienna, and I had to go and see some of the movie locations of The Living Daylights. First of all, We literally just drove up from Croatia. It's about a 10-hour journey, and we were pretty tired. It was pouring with rain. I was like, no, we are going to the, you know, the Luna Park to see where they filmed the Living Daylights. And yeah. We saw the big Ferris wheel, and I really wanted to go on it. And unfortunately, I went there at 9 o'clock at night, and it closed at 8:45 was the last.
Oh, no.
I know, I was gutted. And then I rather annoyed my girlfriend by getting her to do a massive detour and drive me to the theatre, the Opera House, where they do that, you know, the sniper scene from The Living Daylights. And it's still there. It's obviously, you know, it was filmed in Vienna. And I looked at the window where Kara comes out with the gun, and it's all there. It's brilliant. I know you guys have been there as well, yes?
Yeah, well, I have with my wife, Jennifer. John, can you please tell us a bit more about your trip if people haven't heard that already?
Yes, so we went, me and my wife went into railing for our first year anniversary, and it coincidentally happened that we went to Vienna on the date of our first anniversary. And I took her to Mozart's house for a meal for the celebration. And then
is he a good cook? Sorry.
Mozart, Van Gavry, stick to the piano. And basically thought I'd take her on a romantic Ferris wheel. Tried to win her a teddy bear, but that didn't work. Took her on the Ferris wheel. And she thought this was all romantic, and she thought it was great, completely oblivious that it was the one from The Living Daylights. And she put all these pictures on Facebook saying, love my hubby, blah, 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 blah. And I just put one straight of the Ferris wheel, and then Thomas and a few others started quoting Living Daylights quotes back at him. She's like, who's this idiot who's commenting on my anniversary pictures? It's like, oh, nothing, love. Get over that one. And then she realised that I'd just completely duped her in going to a James Bond location for our first wedding anniversary.
But you did have another ride on the Ferris wheel.
We genuinely didn't.
That was a bit rude, sorry.
Yeah. We did go for a midnight coffee at the Prater Cafe, though.
Oh, yes.
Were you nervous, like, going through the doors when you came out? Was that an edgy thing?
I was absolutely terrified, absolutely petrified. And just seeing those balloons on Shayla's screens giving me small doses of PTSD as I'm just looking at them right now.
Sneer to be on them. Yeah. See if people can't see them there. Outside. David as well.
Look at Shayla.
Yeah. We've got Shayla there with the balloon. Yeah. More than one balloon. This is incredible. And David's got the artwork in the background framed with a blue balloon. These are the kind of people we're so glad we've met this year. This is incredible. Look at this. It's just outstanding. At some point, Rob, you'll have to get your Wavecrest Dalton picture out as is customary now, but
for the last,
yeah, absolutely brilliant, guys. So, yeah, well, go back to you, Carrie. Just what was it like for you growing up? Was Timothy Dalton your first Bond?
No, Roger Moore was, because that was who was in the video shop when in half term or bank holidays that we were sent with money, my brother and I, older brother. It wasn't that far. I wasn't horribly neglected as a child. And we were sent, you know, and he, you know, Octopussy was the one I think that was there the most for whatever reason. I actually saw sort of the Roger Moore's For Your Eyes Only, Octopussy and A View to a Kill, because I guess they were the most recent ones, the most released ones that were in the video shop. So when I sort of discovered Dalton, I think the shock of him is quite important. The sudden gear change, particularly in License to Kill, because you can kind of feel the echoes of the earlier movies in Living Daylights, whereas License to Kill feels more complete as a Dalton movie. It has a more settled tone, Winking Fish aside, perhaps. And where it's not, it sounds like a horrible euphemism. I hope you've seen the film, because that really isn't, it's not as bad as it sounds. And absolutely. And of course, Living Daylights as well. And I really grew to love them in that hiatus. And I bet a lot of people on here are the same. Is the 1989 to 95 gap is where I became a Bond fan slash, you know, nut, because there was no new stuff. So then I started to watch and rewatch, and yeah, absolutely. And
you got it.
That was sort of the period where I really got into them. But yeah, actually, my earliest memories of Roger, and you got to love Roger still, because they're just so funny. I will just mention two things, though, because somebody in the comments mentioned Never Say Never Again, and I don't hate Never Say Never Again. I don't love it, but I don't hate it. But I'm going to agree with somebody. It's like it's actually a pretty solid movie up until, I think, where they blow Fatima up. And then when Fatima dies, it's like the movie just goes off a cliff like
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Everybody knows this. And the other thing is, I thinking about the 80s, I reread a John Gardner novel. I don't know if anybody's read the John Gardners. I haven't read them in 20-odd years. I reread for special services. And good Lord, it was dreadful. I mean, I read it. And plot, I mean, I still struggle with the Saab thing.
Yeah, I literally read it 2 weeks ago because I bought it from do you know that workshop?
The Works, that's right, yeah, 2 quid, yeah.
Three books for 5 quid, and I was on holiday and I needed some reading material, so I saw that. But can I just say there's a lovely moment, which I think I might have mentioned on Twitter recently, but there's the woman in the room, attractive woman, Bond walks in, and all he says is, well. And I was just like, he's John Gardner's just got Roger Moore in his head as he wrote that line, and I love that. I loved it that
But I won't spoil it. I mean, it's worth picking up because you can pick it up cheap if you've not read one. But the plot was fabulously all over the place. It was, and, you know, a Saab. And my granddad had a Saab, which was kind of exciting when I worked that out. And then you say, hang on, my granddad's got a Saab. That's not very sexy.
Yeah, but hang on, I had a Ford. Not to say my granddad wasn't.
Well, there you go, absolutely.
My
granddad was in the Navy, so, you know. So
we had them on there. You go,
maybe secret.
900 Turbo at the time was very, very.
Did you start? And do you know that Saab released the special edition to tie in with the book? I mean, that's how pleased they were to be in it. There was an actual big Saab promotional campaign.
A bit harsh, because they were a well-engineered and cool car, but not. I just can't quite fix it in my head that James Bond in one, you know.
I was, when I read it, I was trying to think what other cars of the day were big cars. I'm trying to obviously, I think maybe the Rover 800. I mean, I don't think that would have been any better, would it?
This is Partridge.
All the companies that went out of business were big news then.
I'm not driving a Mini Metro.
Well, there was a Saab in Oxford.
There are more pressing issues with the John Gardner books than that.
Is it a Saab? Is it a Saab Octopussy, or is it a Lancia? Or is it an Alfa?
I think it's a Lancia.
It's a Lancia, yeah.
They've rebadged it.
Alfa Romeo. Alfa Romeo, it's an Alfa. It's an Alfa, but there is a Lancia in another Bond film. But it's not a Saab. I don't know why did John Gardner get obsessed with Saab? Because there's a whole section in the book, in his introduction, where he talks about
he's not the only one obsessed with Saab, Chris. Steve, sorry.
Who is the best Saab?
Listen, you all need to get down the works. It's like £1.50. Get the book. You'll know what we're talking about. It's easy reading. I mean, I quite enjoyed it, but I wasn't holiday. Everything's good when you're on holiday, isn't it? But it's easy reading.
No, I read it in two sittings. It was great fun. But then at the end, I thought that makes... There's some twists in that which are just incredible. I'm not sure hold together. But just in the background of we got the movies in the 80s, we think about that. But yeah, there's the literary Bond revives, which again might be something. That's a whole other podcast. And yes, somebody just said, did it have a key in the funny place? It did. It locked the handbrake, I think. So the key was down in the central column, which is really weird.
And I did like how he goes into real detail about it, but because that was a Fleming thing, obviously. He goes into real detail, technical detail about cars and everything, because he loved all that stuff, clothes as well. So obviously Gardner's tried to write like Fleming, which is quite a nice, his nod. It was the best £1.50 I've probably ever spent. So,
John Gardner ones are superb, and we always do the joke about the poor old Felix. So we won't do that same one again. Live and Let Die, and then License to Kill injuries. So poor guy. But then fishing. Oh, in fact, yes, Rob, I was going to ask you. You had a bit of an idea for potential follow-on to License to Kill. Just tell us about that, Rob.
This is completely ridiculous. Right, so some will know my job as I'm a thriller writer full time. My absolute goal in life, obviously, is to carry on the Flemings. Absolutely. So I've made it very clear to my agent and publisher that if this ever came up, slam me in the frame. I want to be in there. I want to be doing it. This is the ultimate, to write Bond in novel form. So I don't know how it's got to this, Tom.
This is brilliant. You love this.
So because I broached my agent with this topic, and she said it's not stupid, it's not ridiculous. Now I know this, I can go and talk to the right people. So when she said that, I was like, right, okay, well, let's at least make something is there when they, you know, if it ever comes up. And there's a few things, a few intellectual properties that have come up that authors get to audition for. And I want to be right in the frame when the next chance, when Horowitz gives up writing Bond, I want to be there. I want to be in that conversation. I've been writing something.
Don't be shy.
Yeah. For some time, for a while now. And it's just imagining if Bond and Pam married.
Whoa.
And it's set present day.
Can you imagine how beautiful the kids would be?
Honestly, it makes me sick, and I'm making it up, Steve. So, if you'd indulge me a moment, if you'd like to hear this, I don't know what to call it though. I've just got License to Kill 2 written at the top of this top of the page. I don't know what to call it. I mean, I've written obviously quite a bit of this now, but I don't know what to call it because I can't step away from License to Kill. So, could anyone give? If anyone, when you've listened to this, if anyone can give me a. Steve, Carty man, License to Kill, Too Fast to Kill, Too Furious.
There you go.
So right, okay. But this is the kind of audience that I would want this appeal to, because I want, it's Bond. That this is it. It's about Bond. I've tentatively called this chapter Day's End. It's ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. If you get through this with a straight face, then we're good. Orange bled into indigo, where the sun and sea met, staining the waves below Molten, as if just there and there alone, the ocean was on fire. Everywhere else, the dark water chopped and rolled with apparent hostile intent, and clouds black and thick charged, corralling the tropical blues of the day to the furthest corners of the horizon. All the while, from the safety of the beach, James Bond watched in silence, and hoped. And he wore his hands sat curled into fists in the pockets of cream chinos, themselves rolled to the knee, and he wore a navy cardigan open over a white tee, both flapping in the breeze. In his mouth rested the day's solitary Marlborough, a pleasure he allowed himself, in accordance to his mantra that to deny a man all taste of his vices would render that same man bitter and ever more tempted to abandon himself to them once more. He breathed out and reached for his mobile. As always, reception on the beach, but very little elsewhere. So he thumbed through to the name he was looking for. Pam. It didn't take long, given that there was only a handful of numbers in there, and he wondered if she was on her way back yet. They lived in the beach house behind him, but he wouldn't take his eyes from the horizon, straining for their rented vessel to appear. The Right Thing and James Bond were curious bedfellows, with a love-hate relationship always guided by the overarching shadow of the greater good. But now, in his late 60s, Bond had made peace with where his own line in the sand lay. All the same, in this instance, he was unsure as to what to do. Their outfit, Barrelhead Boat Rentals, named after the bar in which they'd first met properly, despite being in the same room once before, without sharing more than a glance, had four vessels in total, one of which was a 36 Outlaw, the quickest boat they had, which topped out at 82.4 miles per hour. Built by Baja Marine, it could cover huge swathes of the ocean quickly and turn on a fat dime, and would make looking for his customers much easier than just standing there. He often took it out at night to give his blood a taste of the old throttle, but he always squared it with Pam first, going off without her acknowledgement. Not that she was in any way controlling, wasn't something that they did. At their stage in life, with their collective backgrounds in mind, they obeyed an unwritten rule. Both told the other where they were. All times, no exceptions. Late that afternoon, Pam had taken the Suzuki into Bathsheba to collect parcels and order 2 kilos of mussels for the coming Friday's dinner. It was their turn to host the monthly meeting of the ex-service expats, something James hadn't initially been enthused by, but he'd thawed with age and with Pam's stiff encouragement. It was for people like them, non-civilians, and while officially they could talk about nothing, they still managed to talk about something. He didn't want to jet off without letting her know. Pam came first, always. The clouds pressed tight, claustrophobic despite being 10,000 feet above the beach. The rain would come very soon. In fact, if he squinted hard at the split of the horizon, he could just make out the dark smudges of rainfall blasting the water. And within it, was that? It was. A boat. More importantly, it was their boat. Forging through the rain, riding the swell, battling hard but making progress. The relief bloomed in James's chest like a spilled drink on a tablecloth. As James lifted his hand high over his head and began to wave, an engine rolled in behind him and came to a stop on the sand with a hiss of grit and a spit of driveway. A soft shadow reached out in front of him, his own, and disappeared as the headlights were doused. He turned. "Great timing, darling," he said, as his wife Pam stepped out of their tired jeep, a ragged yet bulging tote bag over her shoulder, an unsure smile on her face. Pamela Bond was a woman of statuesque beauty, for whom age had brought a distilled grace, and James adored the very ground she walked on. She wore a floating linen dress in canary yellow, and her hair was still cut Isthmus City short because it always made James double take. "The know-it-alls finding themselves in difficulty?" she asked, stepping out onto the beach to join him. "Or have we got a set of very bad thieves in our hands?" James smiled. She was unflappable, his wife, with humour that somehow shone more the tougher life got. He pointed out at the sea, the dot on the horizon that was growing by the moment. "We'll find out very soon, but I'm guessing it's the former." She arrived at his shoulder, leaned into him, her arm intertwining his until their hands met. Having met in the late 80s, they both remained committed to both each other and their respective careers until they could settle down without fear of a tragic call in the middle of the night. Meeting in their primes was unfortunate, but their devotion to each other was permanent, and they conducted a 20-year love affair, the British spy and the CIA special ops pilot, retiring on the same day and catching a plane to Barbados that same night. It meant that now together at last, they never wasted a day, minute or second. "Are we going to charge them extra?" she said. "You know I would. I know you would." James smiled to himself and turned to peck Pam on the temple. But when he turned to look at the incoming vessel again, he saw something was off. How many went out again? Pam had obviously caught it too. 6. And not one of them was him. Him referred to the man at the helm of their 35-foot 338 bow rider. In a tan jacket with fine strands of hair scraped back across the hairless eggshell of his skull, he stared. He steered with far more composure than any of the 6 he'd watched leaving the vessel mere hours earlier. His upper lip was lost in a moustache that must have been there since the man's teens, and his jacket carried sweat stains, thick as paint strokes. "What are you carrying?" James asked. "I've got a 38 in the bag, you?" "Glock 17, rear waistband. We'll let him get closer? Let's see what he has to say, and what he's done with our tourists. Stay close." There we go.
Bravo.
Super,
that was beautiful.
Bless your heart.
That's beautiful, would that give, really. You're the first focus group here. Do you want to read on?
Focus poop.
So, Rob, I'm going to read out some of the comments whilst you were reading. Okay.
Okay.
So Nikolai now needs to buy some of your books. So well done. You've managed to make some sales. Good lad. Chris Goldie has obviously had a few beers, and he says, "License to fill my pants." Mike Royal says you have a very sensual voice. Steve Clamp wants you to read to him every night, which I'm sure you'll happily oblige to.
Tell me when and where, Steve.
And David, licensed to queer, thinks that you are the new Tom Hardy for CBeebies.
That's my other ambition. Seriously, I'd love to read on CBeebies. God bless you, David.
I'd set up an OnlyFans account if I were you and start doing reading sessions.
Only Pam.
Seriously, that's you know when Only Pam, Only Pam's account, absolutely brilliant. But you know, like when I get that, if that call ever happens, that's what's getting sent to him. So
absolutely wonderful. Brilliant.
Great job. God bless and big love. Big love.
As an aviation buff, I can only hope that somewhere within the rest of it there's acknowledgement of the fact they're both pilots as well. I can imagine having their own, like, I'm picturing, like, similar to the end scene of Pearl Harbor, you know, that kind of like romantic version of flying. Yeah.
Oh, with the kid in the silhouette. Oh, my word.
Exactly.
I thought it was great. It was much more subtle than the scenes I've imagined with Pam since.
It's really, really good, Rob. But I was surprised. Did you say he's 60?
In late 60s, yeah.
Late 60s.
So I've gone with present day.
So it is old man Bond in this case.
Yeah. Because if they say to me, because I've done a few things for other IPs where the audition has been like, right, could you do it now? But could you do it later? Could you do it earlier? Could you do this? So I've picked this thing where, right, it's... This is what this is the mad thing I've picked where I think like there's mileage. I think him and Pam are probably the most likely to survive marriage. Seriously.
As a couple. It's interesting that certainly with some of the Bond continuation novels that they've done, you've had Anthony Horowitz and the others sort of picking pot in between the novels, and certainly the latest one, God, I'm gonna have to look now, I can't remember it, Forever and a Day, is pre-Casino Royale.
Yeah.
But they've all kept within the novels. The fact that you're going post-novels, post-movies, but going for the movie aspect as well is very original.
I've gone for settling down Bond.
Yeah. No, well, talking about John Gardner earlier, he had Bond settling down with an agent from, going to be corrected, I think it's the Austrian Secret Service, Flicker, I think her name was. Unfortunately, she only lasts two books. So my only concern is with you giving Bond and Pam a future like that, how is it going to end? Because unfortunately...
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I think...
There is precedent.
I 100% bow to your superior knowledge on this one, Chris. So, because I don't know either. I think I would like this gig in whatever form it comes. And if it's present day, you know, carrying on the current incarnation, that's cool. I just do, you know, I would really like to be in that conversation. But I'd also like to show that there's more, what's the word, strings to the bow than just, you know, that there's some imagination behind it and a little bit of Bond lore behind it as well. So not just just another sort of thriller writer having a crack at it. It comes from a place of real love and reverence. That's what I'm trying to do here. But whatever they say, I mean, when it comes to the Fleming estate, it's like, whatever they say, I mean, like, how high do you want to jump, Rob? I'll flipping jump as high as they want.
Clarify for me. So in your eyes, in this world, with that story, in that Bond world, was License to Kill the last of his missions? Is that where it ended?
No way.
Before?
No. He carried on for another 20 years, and then they had an agreement that if they were both in, you know, fit enough shape to fall for each other, again, I guess. I love the idea that you know.
Sorry, my mind's gone to a filthy place with that statement.
No, but like, I honestly would imagine that Pan was forever macking all over the place around North America. Bond was forever macking everywhere. And it was just like, look, you're the only person I think I can settle down with. Can we do this? Oh. And then they were like, yeah, let's do it.
Wouldn't it be amazing if they went and made that film and they got the Timothy Dalton and they got Carrie Lowell to do roles as all the people, as a kind of not an action film, just a totally off the wall, different film, this is where they reunited all those years later.
Mate, there's a reason why I wrote it like that, because yes, they could still do this right now. We could have
my mind's now going to that Timothy Dalton story from Anthony Stark about him on the plane, and that actually being the end of that. I mean, that's blowing my mind a little bit.
If it's happening, it's happening.
Brilliant.
But definitely, no, I think there's I definitely wrote that in. I'd love to see that.
Because it's funny, because whenever they talk about a Bond spin-off, like we had Jinx being floated, it's obviously an action film spin-off. Well, why not have something that's not an action film? And it's not a big budget, so it's a character piece, and make a real drama. You know, we're not trying to do Bond here, because this is Bond as an older guy. It's a totally different thing, but with the original actor. I think I'm very excited for this. Make sure it happens, Rob.
Someone get John Glenn on the line.
No.
I already
asked Saab, though.
Whether he'd come back, and he said no. He said he's gathering moss. That was the thing. So
he's got a grace in it. Rob, thanks for that. That's absolutely brilliant. I think we need to start the chat on social media about this, because this could go places. It's brilliant. What I think George had said in the chat, that Brosnan at his age now, there could be some mileage in that.
Yes,
with him at that age. Really, no. That's all for part two of our anniversary special, but join us for part three, where we discuss our love for Pierce Brosnan and our love for Tomorrow Never Dies and The World Is Not Enough.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.